Food words hold a tremendous amount of sway over us. They can make us hungry, queasy. They can even become politicized. What our linguistic choices when we're discussing food say about us is explored by Ina Lipowitz in her book, Words to Eat By, Five Foods and the Culinary History of the English Language. It's published by St. Martin's Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Ina Lipowitz to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You trace the history of five of our most basic food words, but there could have been others. Meat, milk, bread, leeks, and apples. Why those five?
Why those five? Well, in the first place, I chose five foods because I wanted to represent the major categories of the Surgeon General's food pyramid. So obviously, meat stands in for protein, bread for cereals, apples for fruit, leek for vegetables, and I got fat in there with butter and oil. I didn't do the sweets at all. Why these five in particular? Because they are the oldest English food words we have. Apple goes back more than two millennia. The other four words go back at least 1,500 years. You paused when you said leeks when you got to that one. Apple goes way back. Milk, meat, bread. Leeks used to be the main word in Old English for the onion family. Garlic is named after the leek.
So all of these predate William the Conqueror.
Oh, absolutely.
The introduction of French words.
That's the major part of the book. William the Conqueror, in 1066, the Normans come over from France and conquer England and change the English language.
But the Romans had been there earlier.
Twice.
Do we still see Latin in the old Anglo-Saxon words?
No, Latin actually came over twice, and that's what's fun about it. Julius Caesar was the first Mediterranean to come up to northern shores. So he brings the Mediterranean diet, he brings Latin words, he looks at these northerners, and he says, they live on milk and meat. But he says it in Latin, of course, and he writes it in Latin. The Roman Empire was in Britain for, 300-400 years, left, taking Latin with them. They came back as Christian missionaries with Latin, again bringing it. But it didn't stick. In the interim, as you're pointing out, the Angles and the Saxons had come over speaking a Germanic language. So Germanic, what was there. The Norman Conquest brings French, and then those two things come together to our English.
So the Germanic language of the Angles and the Saxons merges with the older language? Do we have any idea what people were speaking?
I'm sorry, the Angles and the Saxons brought their Germanic languages with them.
Yeah.
They did not blend it with the language that had been spoken there earlier.
So the older language died.
The Celts. Those are the people who got pushed to the fringes in Scotland and Wales and Cornwall and Ireland. Those languages were basically pushed right to the shores.
We wind up choosing certain words to get across a certain feeling. For example, can altering the name of a food change how we perceive it? Would a bag of prunes not sell as well as a bunch of dried plums?
I know. This is an example I give. I love it that the prune industry lobbied Congress some years ago to change the name of the product to dried plums so that they would increase sales. And it worked like a charm.
Because prune has a kind of a negative connotation, even though there's no reason for that?
In French, it's a lovely word. In English, it has one association. Now the same thing is happening with corn syrup. They're rebranding it as corn sugar to get rid of the bad connotations that high fructose corn syrup has had. I like to give the example also of compare pâté de foie gras, which sounds so sophisticated, and chopped liver, which doesn't. And they're really very much the same product.
It's also interesting that that fructose is a Latin word, isn't it, from fructus, which means, does it mean fruit?
It came to mean fruit. Originally, it's from this Latin verb. You want me to be technical here? Fruor was a Latin verb that meant to enjoy. Fruit literally means pleasure or enjoyment in its original form.
Now we're starting to see other words that perhaps we can trust or not trust, like natural, mm-hmm. organic. All food is organic, but right now organic means something. Well, it meant something specific some years back, and then the rules change. It means something different today.
It certainly does. I think nobody's quite sure what organic means. They keep changing the legislation regarding who can declare what organic. Natural is an interesting one because to be natural, sure, food is natural, but is that a good thing or a bad thing? For instance, you were bringing up Latin. To the Roman Empire, natural was not necessarily the positive thing we know it to be today. They liked to transform nature, not to celebrate it as itself. So when they went up north and saw these people eating natural foods, it was not a good thing in their eyes that they were eating natural weeds and natural fruits that hadn't been transformed. So natural, yes, but is that good or bad?
Earlier, before we used natural, we used farm fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't really mean anything. Everything that is grown pretty much is grown from a farm.
And they like
and it
Pepperidge
was rarely
Farm.
Fresh.
Right, Pepperidge Farm played on that image, but I don't think anybody really thinks there's a farm out there called Pepperidge.
So what does this say about our changing relationship to food or what we expect from it?
Oh, that's a big question. In the book, what I talk about is that I think, at least here in America, English speakers at large, but certainly in America, we have this sort of inferiority complex about food. I focus on the five words, milk, meat, bread, apples, and leeks, because they are such old words, as I said, because they are, in a sense, natural products. But we love them best. We love food best when we hear it in Italian or French, when it's been transformed, when it's been processed. But we like that stuff best when we go out to dine. We go to French restaurants, Italian restaurants. At home, we have those old English ingredients. They're closer to our hearts. When we speak in monosyllables, not fancy French words. So we love that, but we're most at home simply. So we have this split personality going on.
But even with the common words, for example, cow and beef,
mm-hmm.
pig and pork.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was actually the novelist Walter Scott who pointed this out in Ivanhoe, his novel Ivanhoe that's set at the time of the Norman Conquest. And he has a character in his novel say, isn't it great when the animal is alive and the Anglo-Saxon serf is taking care of him? He's a cow or a pig. But slaughter him, cook him, bring him to the table for the Norman overlords. And what do they become? French. Beef from boeuf. Veal, veau. It becomes French when it makes it onto the plate.
Sometimes words can actually misrepresent what we're eating. I don't know if you saw the article in the New York Times today about the lobster salad at Zabar's, which turned out to be a crawfish salad and didn't contain any lobster.
I was forwarded that link. No, I didn't see the article. I was forwarded the link about that.
It was interesting that the Zabar's said, well, crawfish are related to lobster, so we called it that. They're related to lobster, as somebody pointed out, in the same way that a minnow and a trout are related.
Right.
But often we get that sort of thing where people try to make something sound better than it is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, how many Starbucks are within a 5-block radius here? You go into Starbucks and milky coffee doesn't sound as good as cafe latte or a cappuccino or a cafe au lait. You make it sound fancier and more desirable when you translate it into another language.
So the word meat, is that a German word?
Meat is a Germanic word. German is one of the Germanic languages.
No, I meant a Germanic.
It's a Germanic word, but what's interesting there is only in English does it mean edible flesh. In other languages, it just means food. Only in English. In English, the word for what we understand to be meat used to be like the German word, Fleisch, or flesh. Mm. So it doesn't sound good to eat flesh loaf or anything like that. We call it meatloaf. Only in English is that word the way it is.
You note that the French referred to the English as le roast beef.
Yeah, and we call them the frogs. So it goes both ways.
But roast beef would be a French
Well, that's
word.
What's funny about it. Yeah, roast is rôtir and beef is bœuf. But it came to be so associated with the English. Roast beef is the paradigmatic or iconic food of England. There are poems about it and plays about it. The roast beef of England. The name may be French, but the bigness of it, the haunch of it, is English. The French would chop it up and prepare it into a bœuf bourguignon or something like that.
Ina Lipkowitz is my guest. Her book, Words to Eat By, Five Foods and the Culinary History of the English Language. Let's talk about apples because I find that one of the most fascinating. It's the only fruit that we eat that retains its Germanic name.
Berry. Berry is Berry's the second the one. Apple and berry, those are the two.
But then we have apples playing such a major role in literature, for example, Eve eating the apple, when that's very unlikely. It probably would have been a fig or a pomegranate or some other
Absolutely.
Middle Eastern thing.
When you look at Genesis, when you read it in the original Hebrew, there's no apple there. It's fruit. The word in Hebrew is pri. It's fruit. Only later was it identified as the apple. Probably, there are theories about this, probably it's when the Romans came up north and their sacred fruit was the grape. It wasn't the apple. So it was in their interest to make the apple not look so good since it was the sacred fruit up north.
But we have mixed feelings about apples. On the one hand, we have all these sayings that are nice about apples, like someone is the apple of my eye, someone is apple-cheeked, mm-hmm. An apple a day keeps a doctor away. On the other hand, you note the fall of man, Mm-hmm. The Fall of Troy, mm-hmm. The Fall of Snow White can all be pinned on apples.
I know. It's wonderful. But the word for apple also, it gets confusing to pin down when you think about it, because if you're up in a northern climate and you only have apple trees, that's your only tree fruit. The word was large in meaning. It could have been apple. It could have been. It's basically some sort of tree fruit. And that was probably the case down south as well. So those apples for Troy that caused the Trojan War, not quite sure if they were apples, maybe they were quince, maybe they were pomegranates. We don't know what exactly. The word was large in meaning.
And then we have all sorts of other things that are called apples. Eggplants were once called the mad apple in English. Mm-hmm. In French, the potato is the pomme de terre, mm-hmm. the apple of the earth. Mm-hmm. So
why?
Yeah, why apples?
Well, as I said, the word now means the apple, specifically on an apple tree, but then it could mean almost any fruit or vegetable. Why is a pineapple named after the apple? Pomegranate is seeded apple. Pomme is pomme from French, seeded apple. You mentioned the melanzana. Well, the eggplant, we call it the eggplant. It comes in, what are you going to name this thing? Well, mala is apple. Insana is insanity. Why? The eggplant is a member of the nightshade family. People thought it was poisonous. In large quantities, it can be toxic. Tomato and the potato were also sort of suspicious vegetables there at the beginning.
Well, of course, they were part of the Columbian Exchange, so they were mm-hmm. new.
Absolutely, and so you had to find a name for them.
And how did they wind up with the names that they did? In some cases, were they just simply adaptations of the Nahuatl name, Tomatl, for example, or there's chocolate? I think there's an Aztec name for chocolate.
Yes, and they're difficult to pronounce for people who speak European languages. So the TL ending is very different. In the South American languages, it's hitomato, that XI at the beginning. It's difficult for a European mouth to say. So the prefix got dropped, the suffix got dropped, it got shortened to tomat, tomato, but all sorts of names. Pomodoro was golden apple. As you say, love apple for a while in England, but lots of names for these fruits and vegetables that came over from the New World.
Well, the French call potatoes, as we said, a form of apple.
Nice.
But how did we come up with potato? This is from South America.
South America. There's a lot of confusion about the potato, the batata, the yam. There is African and Caribbean influence, and there's no relationship between a sweet potato and a white potato, but they sort of look alike. So the names went back and forth for a while.
And one of my favorites is turkey. The turkeys do not come from Turkey. They come from the Americas.
Correct. And the name there is, we call it the turkey, dand or dandan, different names for the turkey. It was a big bird that they had to find different names for.
We mentioned leeks. Leeks also came to be used to name a whole bunch of different things.
As I said earlier in the show, people don't often realize that garlic is named after the leek. That lick is the leek. And the gar was a word that meant spear-like, probably because the garlic shoots look like spears. The leek was huge in Britain, and it still is in those Celtic countries I referred to earlier. It was pushed aside and ousted by the onion, which has a French name, and came over. So that now it's the onion family. Used to be leekton was an Anglo-Saxon word for a garden.
How do we wind up with milk? Milk was often
looked
down
milk
upon.
From
the
mothers. The name.
The name milk.
The name milk, you mean.
I did know that other thing.
I thought you would. Milk. How do we end? That's also a very ancient word from Germanic, milch. Oh, all the northern European countries have a variant, milk.
Which is where most of the milk was drunk.
Absolutely.
Southern people tended not to drink milk.
For a lot of reasons.
They
made cheese. They transform it. They love to transform nature. So transform a grape into wine, transform an olive into oil, transform milk into cheese. Up north, they drank it. The southerners, the Mediterraneans, and to this day, find it abhorrent that northerners actually drink glasses of milk.
We also, politics works into this. We had, during World War I, hamburger became Salisbury steak. More recently, we saw the silliness of calling French fries freedom fries.
They used to be liberty fries also.
We could have called them Belgian fries because I think the
Belgians
could.
Just in Belgium and they make really good French fries there, the frites. And they claim they shouldn't be called French fries at all. Or French toast was also, I think, freedom toast in Congress, the restaurants that the senators, I forget which two, senators or congressmen?
Well, they didn't stick.
No.
But have any stuck?
Changes in names, you mean?
Mm-hmm. For politics?
Well, let's see. Hamburg. We go back to hamburger. A lot of people don't even realize it's from Hamburg. They think it's burgers that were once made out of ham. They don't quite get the German connection. Frankfurter, we don't tend to call them that. We call them hot dogs now, and there's a whole story about why we do that. I don't think anybody orders freedom fries or liberty fries or freedom toast, French toast. What's French about French toast? They don't call it French toast in France. They call it pain perdu. I don't think these names that are put down on people from above tend to stick. People like to call their food their own names for it.
Ina Lipkowitz teaches fiction and biblical studies in literature department at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and she's written a book called Words to Eat by Five Foods and the Culinary History of the English Language. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.